I unrolled the uniform and smiled at the surprise on all three faces.
What is it for?
I also have to do something to repatriate that paper Cooper was carrying before they find out about it. That comes before anything else tomorrow. I won't need help. This will either work simply and quickly or not at all. Let's return to the second operation. If Ilya can get the information tomorrow, I will need two things. One will be easy, the other not.
What do you want, Milo?
Natasha asked quietly. First, some old clothes. They should be working clothes, and the older the better.
We have some of Ilya's that should fit you,
Natasha said. Any way they could be traced to him if anything happens? I asked. She shook her head.
They came from the government store here, and there must be millions like them in Russia.
All right. Now the hard one. I want to know where I can steal a car. But not any car. This should be an old one that looks as if it's about to fall apart. Maybe the kind of car that a man who was a good mechanic could recover from a junk heap and fix up.
That's Yuri's department,
Ilya said. The short, dark man was lost in thought for a minute. Then he smiled. It was only the second time I'd seen him smile.
I know just the car, he said. It would even be well if it were traced later, for the man who owns it is an informer on his neighbors. I can steal it any evening.
Tomorrow evening or tomorrow afternoon? He scowled.
Tomorrow evening, for certain. Perhaps in the afternoon. Sometimes he is home by 3 o'clock.
All right, I said. We'll see what happens. Everything will depend on the information Ilya gets tomorrow. If it looks possible, then tomorrow afternoon you will show me where the car is, and I will steal it and make the try.
If you try to rescue the pilot tomorrow,
Natasha said,
what do we do?
You will have already done it, I told her. The plans, the car, advice, that's about it. They all three started to protest. Wait, I said. I was sent to do this job. The way I'm planning it, everything will have a better chance if I do it alone. More people would only make them suspicious, and we might even get in each other's way. And there's another thing. The three of you have important work to do here. My orders are to use your assistance as much as I have to, but not to risk you unduly. But there is one other thing you can be putting your minds to.
What?
If I succeed in rescuing Cooper, I'll need some place to hide him until we can make a break for it.
We could keep him here,
Natasha said. I shook my head. Too dangerous, unless we have no choice. It should be somewhere else.
There might be another place,
she said.
There is a girl I know slightly. She has a one-room apartment on the next floor. She is away on vacation now. If we could get into her apartment in some way.
I can get in, I said. So that's settled.
But how will you get him out of Russia?
Ilya asked. I grinned. More theft, I said. My idea is to try to get to some field where we can steal a plane. A fast one. Then Cooper can fly us out. It's risky, but probably safer than anything else. Once I've gotten him, you can be sure of one thing. The bloodhounds will be over every inch of Russia.
I like the way you think, Yuri exclaimed. Perhaps I could go with you.
No, Yuri, I said. Your job is here, and believe me, it's a much tougher one.
Milo is right, Yuri,
Natasha said. But in the meantime, I said, you can be thinking about where we might have the best chance of getting a plane and the best way to reach it. Yuri nodded, trying not to show his disappointment. We talked generally for another hour or so, then Yuri left, and the three of us went to sleep. I was up early the next morning and back at the trial as soon as the building was open. While I was waiting for everyone to file into the trial room, I took another look at the case the MVD man was guarding. The map was still there. I didn't want to attract attention by too much interest in the case, so I strolled around the building. There were several offices around at the other end of it, mostly filled with either MVD men or what seemed to be Russian VIPs. I got a couple of questioning glances and soon retreated to the trial room. The hearing was much the same as the day before. It was clear that they were more bent on making the United States look guilty than in bringing out anything on Cooper. Just before the midday recess, the defense attorney got up to answer one of the prosecutor's blasts. He painted a glowing picture of Cooper as a simple Midwestern boy with an honest, peace-loving family who never knew what he was getting into. He said that these were the kinds of Americans the Russians understood and liked, and he wound up by saying,
"To show the world the true meaning of socialist humanitarianism, this boy's father and two brothers are on their way to Russia right now as guests of the government. They will arrive in Moscow tonight and be here by his side tomorrow when he once more faces this court."
There was a burst of applause from the audience, and then court was adjourned until afternoon. I hurried back to the apartment. Ilya was already there. To my surprise, so was Natasha.
"I decided to take the afternoon off, too," she explained. "It is not difficult in my job."
I nodded and turned to Ilya.
"How did you make out?"
"Fine,"
he said. He brought a piece of paper from his pocket.
"But it cost 15,000 rubles.
"It's worth it," I said. "Let's see." The three of us bent over the sheet of paper. Ilya had made a crude drawing of the route between the prison and the Hall of Columns, with all the streets marked. The time of departure, both morning and afternoon, was written down and the other information I had wanted. He was transported in an official MVD car with three guards, one of whom drove. The driver was an MVD man and the other two were KGB. That made it a little tougher, but it still looked possible.
"I think I can do it," I said. "We'll talk more about it when I come back."
The three of us had lunch, and then I went into the other room and changed into the MVD uniform. By the time I reached the Hall of Columns, the trial was already underway, which was what I wanted. The corridor was empty except for the glass-covered case and the solitary guard. I entered the building from the other side and walked down the corridor to the front. This time no one paid any attention to me as I passed the offices. I was only another uniform. The guard at the case looked up in curiosity as I approached.
"What is this?"
he asked.
"Am I being relieved early?"
"For a few minutes," I said. "I will stay here until you return. If you do."
"What do you mean by that?"
I shrugged. "Perhaps they will give you another assignment. All I know is that I was called into the office and ordered to come here. You are to report there at once to Colonel Sergeyev."
"Who the devil is Colonel Sergeyev?"
he demanded.
"From the Komitet Gosudarstvenoy Bezopasnosti," I said.
He paled at the mention of the KGB.
"What do they want to talk to me about?"
"How should I know?" I retorted. "Do you see any decorations on my uniform that they should take me into their confidence? I only follow orders, as do you, and yours are to go at once to the office and see Colonel Sergeyev. I will guard the spy's things, although I do not think he will be trying to get them back."
"That is true,"
he said, but his mind was on other things.
"Well, I suppose I should be going."
"I think so," I agreed solemnly. He started off with a worried look on his face, then looked back.
"What is your name, comrade?"
"Chernikov," I said. "Good luck, comrade." He nodded absent-mindedly and walked on. I watched impatiently for him to disappear around the bend in the corridor. Then I would have 2 minutes, three at the very most, before he discovered there was no Colonel Sergeyev, no Chernikov, and no orders for him to report at the office. And within 1 minute after that, there would be several men pounding down the corridor looking for me. He moved out of sight. There was no time for niceties such as picking the lock. I lifted my gun and smashed the butt down on the glass. It broke with a crash. I reached through the jagged spears of glass and grabbed the map. I moved swiftly toward the front entrance, stuffing it into my pocket. Even as I went through the door, I thought I heard a shout somewhere back in the corridor. I went down the steps to the street level and looked around. Immediately in front of the hall, a number of Zim limousines were parked with no one in them. Farther down to the left, a Pobeda, something like a small Chevrolet, was parked in front of a tobacco store. A man was sitting behind the wheel. I turned and strode quickly down to it.
"Move this car out of here," I ordered, "and make it fast."
"But I'm waiting for someone in there,"
he said, gesturing toward the Hall of Columns.
"I don't care who you're waiting for," I snapped. "Khrushchev is arriving here any minute and the street is to be cleared.
Drive out of here as fast as you can, or I may take you off the street myself. He looked startled, but he obeyed. He started the car and pulled away, gunning the motor as much as he could. I turned and stepped into the tobacco shop, and none too soon. As I stood at the counter, I saw 7 or 8 men come running out of the Hall of Columns. They stopped to look around and caught sight of the Pobida speeding away. They all piled into a Zim and gave chase as soon as they could get it started. I bought a package of cigarettes, walked down to the first block, and turned left. Another block away, I caught a bus. I rode it for about 15 blocks and got off. I caught another bus going the opposite way and stayed on for 5 blocks. Then I took a taxi. Yuri was already with Ilya and Natasha when I reached the apartment. They all three looked relieved as I came in.
You got it?
Natasha asked excitedly as she closed the door.
Yes, I said. I took the map from my pocket and went immediately to the stove.
I took a dish from the cupboard above and then held a match to the map.
Give me another minute, I told them.
I went into the other room and changed back to my own clothes. I returned to them carrying the uniform.
This must be destroyed as quickly as possible, I said.
There is an incinerator in the building,
Natasha said.
Just down the hall. I'll put it in there.
Good girl, I said, handing the uniform to her. She took it and hurried out the door. She was back within a couple of minutes. The gun may still be a risk, I said, but I'm going to need it, so I'll take that one. I think I got away all right, but they're going to start a big hunt, and I think I may have made one mistake. I told them about the taxi I'd taken, and they confirmed my guess. MVD men usually did not pay when they wanted to ride in cabs.
But it may be all right, Yuri said. The driver may be so pleased at getting paid that he will keep his mouth shut. And you did leave the taxi 3 blocks away.
Maybe, I said. But once he hears about the search for a phony MVD man, he may be frightened enough to report it. But the time it will take for that to happen may be long enough. What about the car, Yuri?
It is there, he said. To take it will be easy.
And the clothes? I asked Natasha.
In the other room. I should have told you so you wouldn't have to change twice.
It's all right, I said. I have a little time. Ilya, describe the streets on that route again.
Yuri knows them even better than I do,
he said. We brought out the diagram that Ilya had made and Yuri looked at it. He then gave me a minute, almost photographic description of the route of the car as it would take Cooper back to the prison. I finally settled on what looked like the best place, the last 6 blocks before the prison. From Yuri's description, it sounded narrow enough for what I had in mind. Yuri had said that 2 cars could barely pass. I put my finger on what looked to be about halfway along the stretch.
What is along here, Yuri? I asked.
Workers' apartments, he said. Perhaps 1 or 2 small stores, that is all.
Are the people who live there apt to interfere?
If they see uniformed men fighting with another man, they'll lock the doors and pull the blinds down. They know that in such a case it is better to be completely ignorant.
In this case, I approve, I said. Well, we'll leave in about 1.5 hours. I went into the other room and got the gun. I wanted to check it over thoroughly and be sure that everything was in perfect working order before I started.
You will shoot the 3 guards?
Yuri asked eagerly.
I don't know, I confessed. I hope I don't have to shoot, but I may not be able to avoid it. I'll have to see how it works out.
I think Yuri looked disappointed, but we turned to other details. Natasha had checked and verified that the girl upstairs was still on her vacation. I would bring Cooper back to this apartment, then go up and pick the lock and move him there. Yuri had looked into airfields not too far from Moscow and thought he'd found a small one that had possibilities. He was going to try to find out more. Ilya suggested that the best way to get to the airfield would be to buy a small car on the black market and drive as near there as possible. He thought that mere boldness might get us through, especially if we used a popular small car that many families used for their vacations. All the suggestions sounded possible, and we still had some time to decide on the best. I changed into the old clothes and transferred my papers and other possessions. Then Yuri and I left. We took a bus, transferred to another one, and finally ended up in a section of Moscow I had never seen before. We walked 3 blocks after getting off the second bus. Yuri finally stopped on a street corner and pointed in the direction we were facing.
There it is,
he said proudly. There was only one car parked on the street, so there was no chance of making a mistake. Yuri had certainly followed my instructions to the letter. I had never seen an older or shabbier car. It evidently dated from the time when the Russians were copying our Fords, and it looked as if they had also copied the idea of repairing it with baling wire. Are you sure it will run? I asked.
Oh, it runs very good, Yuri said. You want me to go show you?
I'll steal my own cars, Yuri, I said. Where is the owner?
On the next block, drinking vodka. He will be there for 2 hours or more. Nobody else will pay any attention. They hate him. So much that if the car doesn't start at once, they may rush out and give you a push.
Now, how do I get to Nevka Street? His face lit up.
You see, I told you that you need me. The way is very complicated, but I will show you.
All right, I said, giving in. But as soon as we're near the place, you'll have to get out. He grinned, and we started down the street. We reached the car and climbed in. I hadn't really believed Yuri, but certainly no one made an outcry or paid any attention to us. I reached under the instrument panel, disconnected the ignition wires, and wired them together. I stepped on the starter. I don't think I expected anything to happen, but the motor started at once. It didn't sound too bad. I put it in gear and we moved off. We reached a spot near my destination without mishap. I stopped the car and told Yuri to get out. He put up a little argument, but finally did. I'll see you back at the apartment, I told him and drove off. I had a few minutes to spare and drove slowly. I finally reached the spot about 15 minutes before the car with Cooper was due to arrive there. Yuri had described the street perfectly. By turning and backing, I finally got the car directly across the street. There was no room for another car to get by on either side. I killed the motor and got out. I went around to the front and lifted the hood. Then I reached down and ripped the wires from the carburetor. While I was at it, I got some grease and smeared it around my hands and a little on my face. I put the hood down and went back to sit behind the wheel. I waited until I knew the car was about due, then began stepping on the starter. I was aware when the car arrived, but I didn't look up. The starter whirred with a dismal sound. The horn blew on the other car. I looked up, waved hopelessly at the car, and continued to press the starter. The driver leaned out of the window.
Get out of the way, he ordered.
I can't, I said. It will not start.
Then push it out of the way, he said.
I shrugged and gave up with the starter. I made sure the handbrake was partly set and climbed out. I got behind the car and pushed, but nothing happened. I saw the men in the car exchanging words, then the driver got out and came over to me.
Come on, he said roughly. We have to get this junk pile out of the street. We are on government business.
I gave him a sickly smile and gestured futilely at the car again. He muttered under his breath, but put his own shoulder against it. We both pushed, but I didn't work too hard and the car still didn't move. We struggled for a couple of minutes and finally the driver straightened up, looked at the other car and shrugged. There was some more conversation there, while I held my breath. Then the rear door of the car opened and one of the KGB men got out. He left the door open. Inside, I could see the other guard and Cooper. The KGB man came over and scowled at me.
This time we'd better get this car out of the way or we will arrest you, understand?
Yes, sir, I said. One of them got on either side of me and put his shoulder to the car. I did the same, facing the one who had his back to me. As I pushed, I reached for my gun. The car began to move slowly despite the brakes. I straightened up and turned to face the man back of me. The gun barrel raked across his forehead before he even knew what was happening. Without waiting to see him fall, I whirled on the other one. He had already guessed that something had happened, and he was trying to turn and get his gun out at the same time. But he was at a disadvantage. He was off balance and his back was toward me. But he could make it. I brought the gun down on his head. He grunted and collapsed. Two down, I muttered to myself, and looked at the car. The other KGB man had his gun out and was lining it up on me. I dropped to the ground behind the MVD man. The other gun went off and I heard the bullet over my head. By then, I had him in my sights. I pulled the trigger gently and saw him slump back against the seat. His gun dropped out of the car. I jumped to my feet and ran over. The guard wasn't dead, or even unconscious. He was leaning against the back of the seat, one hand clutching his shoulder, the blood coming out between his fingers. He glared at me and tensed his body.
"Don't try it," I told him in Russian. "I can't miss you this close."
He struggled with himself and lost the battle. He stayed where he was, watching me closely. I turned my attention to Cooper. He was sitting there, looking as if he didn't believe what he saw.
"What is this?"
he said, as though he didn't expect an answer.
"It's what they used to call the arrival of the U.S. cavalry," I told him in English. "A modern version of an old-fashioned rescue. Come on, Cooper, let's get out of here fast."
"I don't believe you,"
he said.
"You read stuff like this in books, but it doesn't happen. I'm only a sky jockey. Nobody is going to send the cavalry to rescue me."
"Somebody did," I said impatiently. "Come on, we don't have all day. This place will be swarming with cops any minute."
He was shaking his head.
"It was mighty nice of you to make the effort, but I'm not going with you."
I had expected almost anything but this.
"What?" I asked.
"I'm not going with you,"
he repeated.
"Why in the hell not?" I demanded.
"My dad and two brothers are landing here tonight,"
he said slowly.
"What do you think would happen to them if I escaped?"
"They wouldn't dare do anything to them," I said. He was shaking his head again.
"I ain't going to risk it. My lawyer says I won't get more than 7 years. I can do that and still find my family alive when I get home."
I looked at him with speculation.
"You can't do it,"
he said, guessing what I was thinking.
"If you try to knock me out and drag me, you'll never make it. You may not anyway, unless you leave at once."
He was right. I knew it, but I hated to be cheated after everything that had been done. But I didn't have any time. I kicked the guard's gun under the car and looked at the other two guards. They were still out. I turned and ran.
"Give my regards to the Statue of Liberty when you see her,"
Cooper called after me. I didn't bother to answer. I knew I was going to have my hands full for the next few minutes, at least until I could get back to the apartment and change clothes. I ran swiftly for 2 zigzag blocks, then slowed down to a fast walk. I threw the gun away. I wanted to keep it, but it would be too damning as evidence if it was found. 2 more blocks away, I saw a small car parked with no one around it. I slipped into it, tore out the ignition wires, and put them together. Then I drove away. As I left the curb, I heard a shout behind me, but ignored it. I left the car at the curb a good 10 blocks away from the apartment house, and went the rest of the way on foot, keeping a sharp eye out for cops. I was about 2 blocks away from the apartment when I suddenly saw Natasha on the street ahead of me. At the same time, she saw me and started for me as fast as she could walk. Her face was white with tension, and I knew something had happened.
"What's wrong?"
"We can't stand here. We must walk away from here."
She led the way along the first cross street.
"They arrested Ilya and Yuri a half hour ago."
"Who?"
"KGB, I think. I was out and came back just in time to see them being led out into the streets."
"Do you know why?"
"No, one never knows. We may have been on a suspicion list, or someone may have made a report about us. Anything. And there are still guards on the apartment. Did you leave your papers there?"
"No."
"Then you can get away. That's why I waited on the street. I hoped I would see you before they found me."
"They won't find you now," I said.
"They will," she said. "No one can live in Russia without papers, and now I have no papers I can use."
"We'll find a way," I said. "But first we've got to hole up somewhere. There's probably already a description of me around. Do you know of a hotel where they don't frown on a girl visiting a man in his room?"
"The Molenka, I think. I believe I heard Yuri talking about it once."
"All right. First, let's go somewhere where I can buy clothes."
We took the subway, getting off at a stop Natasha knew. She led the way to a small clothing store, and I succeeded in buying a suit that wasn't too bad. I bought a few other things and some clothes for her. There was no place for me to change there, but we went back to the subway and I changed in the men's room. I stuffed the old clothes under some paper in a trash basket, and she went on to the hotel. She was right about the hotel. The clerk looked at my papers and I signed the register. I explained that the girl wasn't staying long, and for a minute I thought he was going to wink at me. We'll be safe here for a while, I told her when we were in the room. But we'd better not stay too long. The hunt for me will probably be overshadowed by the one for you, but there's always a chance someone will want to see your papers. And in the hunt for me, they may eventually get down to checking all the guests in hotels. I'll be all right until they make a call to Rostov. So we'd better put our minds to getting out of Moscow.
How can I get out?
She asked.
And where would I go if I did get out?
To America, with me, I said.
America?
Why not? You're a member of the Russian underground, and you should be very welcome. You'll probably get a job right away. You could be valuable.
You think so?
She exclaimed. Then her face fell.
It is awful to think that I might get out just when Ilya and Yuri have been caught.
I don't think we can do anything about that, I said gently. If I hadn't created such an uproar, I might have been able to, but not now. We'll have to go, Natasha. I'm sure that Ilya and Yuri would agree. Then she came into my arms and cried until she was exhausted. We stayed in the hotel for 2 days while I thought up ways of escaping and discarded them. The search was too big for either a black market car or another stolen one. The papers were full of the story of the American agent who had tried to rescue Cooper, and it had even started Khrushchev off on another tirade of threats against America. In the meantime, everyone there had denied knowing anything about an agent. Finally, I hit on an idea I thought might work. Leaving Natasha in the hotel room, I spent 2 nights down at the trucking center in Moscow. Most of it was spent in little cafes, drinking vodka and listening to the truck drivers. The third night, we both went down. By this time, I was familiar with which trucks were which. Standing in the shadows, we watched a big six-wheeler being loaded for Leningrad. When it was loaded, the two drivers went into the cafe for a last drink. We slipped out of our shadow and quickly climbed in the back. We made ourselves as comfortable as we could on the boxes, and a few minutes later we were on our way. All through the night the big truck roared along, and well into the next day. I had been watching the time, and when it seemed we should be nearing Leningrad, I slipped to the rear and began to watch through the tarpaulin. When we finally reached Leningrad, we looked for our chance, and as the truck went around a sharp corner, we dropped off. In Leningrad, we took a trolley to the center of the city, and I found a bus terminal. I bought 2 tickets to Tallinn, south of Leningrad, getting them one at a time and from different windows, just in case someone wanted to see papers. But nothing happened, and we were soon on the bus heading south. Tallinn was a little more of a problem. We were there 2 days and nights, getting a little nervous before I found a fisherman I could bribe to take us across the narrow neck of the Baltic to Finland. It wasn't the most ideal place to go, but I had little choice. That night the fisherman took us, and a couple of hours later we were at the American embassy. It took a little more doing to get them to awaken the ambassador, but it was finally accomplished, and a handsome gray-haired man in a fancy bathrobe was peering at us curiously. I'm a major in the United States Army, I told him. For security reasons, I can't tell you any more than that at the moment. I want to make a phone call to General Sam Roberts in Washington. He must have heard of the general, but he didn't even blink.
That's a most unusual request, Major. Would you mind if the call was made in my presence?
No, sir.
Then come on,
he said. He led the way to his office and indicated the phone. I picked it up and put in the call. It took a while for it to get through, but finally there was General Roberts on the other end. General, I said, this is your favorite chestnut puller. Have you been keeping up with your reading?
I'll say I have, he said. We were worried about you, boy. I see where things didn't quite go right. How bad is it?
Not too bad. The first problem went off fine. The second didn't because the prize pupil didn't want to play. He whistled.
Where are you now?
The American Embassy in Finland. And I'm homesick. Incidentally, you remember the 3 friends I was to look up?
Yes.
One of them is with me, the young lady. The other 2 were unable to make it.
I see,
he said. He was silent for a minute.
I guess maybe the best way is the simplest, less possible complications. Tell the ambassador to expect a call from the State Department. We'll see you soon. Got any money left?
Enough to get back on.
Okay, boy. Goodbye.
He hung up, and I told the ambassador about the expected call. He had some brandy brought in, and we all sat and waited together. The call came in a half hour. I don't know what he was told, but it seemed to cheer him up.
"Well, Major,"
he said, slapping me on the back when he'd finished,
"why didn't you just tell me your troubles? No problem at all. We'll find a couple of rooms for you and the young lady, and everything will be fixed up in the morning."
I didn't know what he meant by that, but I kept my mouth shut. And I found out in the morning. Right after breakfast, we were handed two passports good for passage one way from Finland to America. The names on them weren't ours, but obviously the ambassador didn't know that.
"Anybody can lose his passport, Major Johnson,"
he said.
"No need to call Washington about that."
"I'm the cautious type," I said, and let it go at that. That afternoon, Natasha and I boarded a regular jetliner for America. When we'd unbuckled our seatbelts and leaned back, I lit a cigarette. "Well, honey," I said, "you'll soon be in America."
"I know,"
she said. She sounded excited.
"Will I see you again after we are there?"
"Definitely."
"It will be wonderful. Still, I think I may miss Moscow in the spring."
"And the red, red flowers?" I asked, quoting from the password I had used when I first met her.
"Well, there will still be flowers blooming there, and maybe one day the whole country will bloom."
She smiled and put her head on my shoulder. A few minutes later, she was asleep.